Hello, everyone. Welcome to the CDA meeting on Thursday, August 8th. Lisa, if you could go through the call to order and roll call, please.
Yes. So welcome. If you lose connection at any time, reconnect by clicking the link in your email invite. Committee members, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Use the raise hand feature if you wish to speak, ask questions, or request a roll call vote. Staff, please activate your video when you are speaking. Use the raise hand feature when you are asked a question. For members of the public, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon by the chair. Please do not use your video. Chair, the floor is yours.
Okay, Lisa, could you please call the roll?
Yes. Commissioner Dwayne Gray.
Present.
Gray present. Commissioner Greg Reed.
Present.
Reed present. Commissioner Madeline O'Connor.
Present.
O'Connor present. Commissioner Mary Strickland.
Present.
Strickland present. Alder Tag Evers.
Here.
Evers present. And Alder Isidore Knox. At this time, Alder Knox is not present. So, Chair, you do a quorum is present.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. And Claude Gilmore is out tonight because he is not feeling well. Is there a move to approve the minutes from our meeting on July 11th? Or any comments or questions about those minutes?
This is Mary, so moved.
This is Gray, I second.
Okay, with unanimous consent, the meeting minutes for July 11th are approved. Lisa, are there any public comments?
The registration reporting shows no members of the public have registered to speak.
Okay, are there next on the agenda, are there any communications, Matt, others?
Yes, we have two communications. We were informed today by HUD that we were awarded $68,000 in extra administrative fees for our VASH voucher program, which serves veterans experiencing homelessness. So it's specifically fees to help with things like security deposits, housing navigation, things like that. This is part of a national push for VASH. So we had people from Washington here today. We did a press conference, so you'll likely see that on the news tonight. We were awarded, we found out the amount of the award about an hour before the press conference. So this is all very new news. And then
You had people from Washington here for 68,000.
they're doing a tour through the Midwest. It's a part of a
Okay.
$20 million initiative.
Thank you. Okay.
Yep, they I think were Twin Cities, Eau Claire, us, kind of making their way down to Chicago, and communities that were awarded. And then you've likely seen the paper that the city of Madison, through our operating budget, had to put forward cuts. Just so you know, CDA, because you are an enterprise agency not supported by the levy, we are exempt from cuts. So as an agency, CDA, really what we put forward in the budget is a cost to continue budget with no significant changes. It's likely that our meeting next month will be able to present a bit more about what cuts could mean to some of the other agencies that support us in economic development, community development, planning, building inspection, those sorts of things. So we can give a bit more detail of what those could mean for our sort of assistance from other agencies at the September meeting. And that's all I have for communication.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Are there any disclosures or recusals at this time? Okay, hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. We have on the consent agenda CDA resolution number 4621 for a disallowance of an insurance claim. Does anybody have any questions or comments, or may I apply the unanimous consent to move forward and approve that? Okay, seeing no objections, that is approved. And then in terms of our two discussion items, the first one is going to be item 84646 with an update on capital projects. So turn it over.
Excuse me, Commissioner Reed, I believe you have to have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda or adopt the consent agenda.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
Okay, thank you, everyone. That consent agenda is now approved. So we will go back to the capital projects.
All right, so I'm just gonna quickly go through an update, which we'll likely do at most meetings going forward. When we went through our strategic planning, we showed you this, which is a chart of our current capital projects. So I'll just go through the ones that are really active right now. So Teresa Terrace, we have signed contracts and are scheduling the groundbreaking for Teresa Terrace. Hopefully within a month, we will be demolishing and be able to get our holes dug for Teresa Terrace townhomes this year. So that is fully on track. For the Triangle B1, we are now in the final phase of design. So construction documents have started. We are finalizing our debt and equity packages. We'll pick our debt and equity partner in the next week or two and then start working through the legal documents for that. And then the financing package from the city that is a mix of likely home funds, affordable housing funds, TIF funds, that we're in the queue to be underwritten through some of those city processes right now. And so all of those things will come together over the next probably 3 or 4 months. So the next resolutions that you'll likely see are to start accepting the money. But because of where we'll hit in the year, we're not going to break ground in December. We'll break ground and have a final closing probably in March of 2025. The future phases, B2, B3, we will be preparing our tax credit applications for those for January. So while we're working through all what we need to do to start construction on the first phase, we'll be working through a tax credit application for B2, B3 sort of at the same time. So that'll be the next wave of things you see, but likely nothing for the next couple of months as we churn through a bunch of paper. Village on Park, parking garage is under construction. I believe that the second floor was poured this week. So we're pouring a floor every couple of weeks. We hope to have an on-site meeting at Village on Park this fall to be able to see sort of the full structure of it. And we'll be able to then walk over to possibly the Park Badger site and you can see that site as well. For Park Badger, we are wrapping up sort of the site analysis. And I think we have a good handle on the constraints that things like the fire station put on it, as well as the soils. We got some initial construction cost numbers this week. And next week, we'll start to dig into the tax credit financing to figure out exactly how many units are feasible and required, with a goal of going back out to the community for a community meeting in late September and then circling back with Urban Design Commission to get some initial feedback on design and circle back with you to get feedback on overall site designs, probably for your October meeting. Again, it'll depend on the numbers that come back next week. So look forward to that in the next couple of months. And then the rest of the projects are really sort of mostly on hold until we get closer to the time that we would be financing and constructing them. So all in all, everything on this work plan is on schedule.
Does anyone have any questions? Commissioner Gray.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Reed. So Mr. Wager, so when we look at the work plan, I notice we don't see any finances in here or anything of that nature. So is there any way we can kind of see how much each project kind of costs and how that kind of works out? Because when we're looking at these plans, we see the construction, but we don't know any of the financial aspects of it. Is that something you can consider adding to the chart or?
Sure, absolutely. Yep, because you're right. You see each of these kind of piecemeal as we approve bits of financing. And so I get that it's seeing the whole package. So for like example, Teresa Terrace last month, you accepted the money from the city, $2+ million for that. But like the Triangle B1, I think I'll have better numbers for you in the next couple of weeks, because the big swing on that is the geothermal system. Are we going to do it? Are we going to pay for it all up front, or are we going to pay for it with each phase? So that's a big question mark that's out there. I mean, like over $10 million for the geothermal system to serve the whole triangle. And that we'll probably be doing our test. We'll be digging test holes in August. That'll tell us a lot more when we get into engineering. Mm-hmm. So that's a long way of saying for the ones that are still 6+ months away from construction, I won't have final numbers for a while. But yeah, we can give a more of a summary for you at a future meeting.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? One question I do have is, now with the integration of the town of Madison into the city of Madison, you know, that's definitely going to be impacting the Park Badger or Village on Park neighborhood. Are there any infrastructure improvements along Park Street or Badger Road that are going to overlap or coincide with any of the redevelopment that's going to be taking place at the Village on Park or in the immediate neighborhood?
So on one hand, as in preparation for the town coming in, as well as a bunch of infrastructure things that we knew we had to do, the city of Madison created TIF District 51 and seeded it with about $100 million of increment. So that TIF district has a whole host of infrastructure things all over South Madison that the city is making investments on. And as in particular to Park Badger, as part of the North-South BRT, there is work that would come with that. But sort of tangential to that, the city is also looking to rebuild significant parts of Park Street. And when we get down to this section of Park Street that's next to our building, it's probably a full reconstruct, changing lanes, replacing sewer, all those sorts of things. That construction happens likely a year after we begin construction. So we'll be coordinating our design with that, but we will start first, most likely. But we are actively working with the Madison Metro team, who's working on BRT, traffic engineering, streets engineering, the sewer district. We have full staff meetings for all the infrastructure on a fairly regular basis to coordinate our design of Park Badger.
Kind of sounds like the perfect storm all at once.
Yes, because we're moving buses, redoing the subsurface infrastructure, some of which flows through Park Badger. So we have a sanitary sewer pump station in the middle of the block, which would have had to be replaced anyways, but now we have to incorporate that into the design. So those are the sorts of things, when I say that we're working on the site plan, it's not just where the buildings fit, it's how to handle the infrastructure, all those things at the same time.
Similar question for Triangle. Are there any significant infrastructure upgrades or changes that are going to be happening along Regent, Park, or West Washington?
It is likely that the bulk of Regent Street will be rebuilt during the course of us rebuilding the Triangle. And a lot of that is storm sewer related. There is likely a point where sanitary sewer will need to be upgraded as we add more units. right now, in our first phases, we're just replacing units. So there's not a net increase in the number of fixtures really in the building. But it's conceivable that when we start to get into some of those later phases, we'll have to look at upgrades to sanitary sewer, but that could also be incorporated into, say, the Regent Street rebuild. They usually would redo sanitary sewer, storm sewer all at the same point, but they're not at a point of designing that yet. But again, as we are sort of mid-construction and that's getting planned, we'll look to integrate those to improve the pedestrian connections, the sewer, all that infrastructure.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions? Okay, Matt, is there anything else to cover?
Nope, that is the update for now.
Okay. Shifting gears, Larry, I think it's your turn with the report on Housing Authority Operations.
Yeah, good evening. So start with the report titled 2024 Housing Choice Voucher Utilization. So there you see about halfway down, kind of in that top section, that we're utilizing about 91% of the vouchers that we've been issued. The next section down then shows the other half of the story, that we're utilizing about 121% of the budget authority. We've had a strong push this year to get vouchers. You'll recall about a year ago, we ran a lottery to get a new waiting list for the Section 8 program. So we had a lot of people who were ready to go as part of that process. Admissions and eligibility staff did a lot of pulling from that waiting list. And then Section 8 staff have done a lot of assistance in getting the vouchers to participants to then lease up. So we are pretty strongly over our budget for the year, and that is expected. We've been pushing hard to get vouchers out the door, and we were carrying a large contingency into this year. So we have been monitoring to make sure that we're not overspending, I think these numbers show just how many vouchers we've successfully got out the door, and that we're helping get helping people get housed. Dropping down to the next section, the PBB utilization rate, you see that's at 65. I've mentioned a few times now over the last few months that as Tree Lane and Rathke get reoccupied, those are the properties that were under ownership with Heartland Housing and now transitioned over to Sinair. We'll start to see that number tick up a little bit, because that's dozens of units between those two properties. So we've had conversation. Section 8 staff has been in communication with Sinair to see what their timing is. And we do expect in the coming months, we'll start to see those units lease up. So we'll see the PBB utilization rate start to go back up. The mainstream categories, kind of that purplish color, 59 vouchers. You see that we've now hit the 90% utilization rate for that program. And then the first time this year that we see the emergency housing voucher program drop below 100%. So going into this year, we knew we'd be high. We knew we overissued. But the good thing is, if you overissue in the first part of the year and then you stop issuing by mid-year, you should start to see some attrition happen. And now the rate has started to creep down below 100%, which is good, because we overspent in the first half of the year, and we need to make sure that we're slightly under 100% the rest of the year. So I think we're in a really good spot with that program as well. Jumping over to the utilization or the occupancy report. As I've been mentioning here, I know for a number of months, what ends up happening is when we pull people off of our Section 8 waiting list, often we're pulling those households are living in public housing units. So we do see kind of a dip in occupancy often when this happens. And again, I don't like to advertise too much ahead of what you're looking at in your report, but we have been closely monitoring occupancy at our public housing units. And you can see in the June numbers, we started to move in the right direction from where we were in May at each of the properties. But a report that we ran about a week ago over our overall public housing portfolio is over 98% now occupied. So You can see each one of these properties, 96, 97, 94%, 97%. Those have all over the last 2 months notched up so that our whole portfolio is over 98%. So again, I don't want to tell you too much about what's not in front of you, but just saying that not to be overly concerned that we have made really good progress over the last number of months in getting units at our public housing properties occupied. And then finally, I'll share my screen on the aged receivables. So here we have noticed a slight decline, a slight backslide in overall dollars that we've been able to collect from people who are behind on rent. You can see the number. Actually, I'm going to take a quick step back. I think this is the first time that we're looking at this report in this format. So taking board feedback over the last number of months, we updated this form to hopefully read a little bit clearer. So I'll just walk you through the format first. So now the first number that you see is number of households that are behind. And again, this is public housing, multifamily, our PBVs at Truex, and then overall portfolio. What percentage of our households that number represents? So just under 10% of households are behind in rent. What that dollar amount represents, and then what the associated delinquency rate is. So I know we're looking kind of in the 14, 15, 16% over the last number of months. So diving into those numbers, seeing where that backslide has happened, I did confirm earlier today that if you drill down, 9 households of these 81 actually represent $44,000 of this 40 of this $84,000 delinquency number. And all nine of those households we are working through different phases of the legal process with them. So we have engaged with the city attorney's office and taking direction. So I don't want to share too much more because we are in that process. But please do know that once we work through that process, these numbers will drastically change. And again, that would push the numbers of households probably into the upper 60s, low 70s, in terms of what that delinquency rate is. When I ran the numbers, removing those 9 households, we get down to about 13%. So it cuts it in half. So I do know that we've seen a spike here, but drilling down, we've really identified where some of those big dollar amounts are. And I have confirmed with staff that that those households are going through the process. And then the last category that was just kind of laid out differently, households then with repayment agreements. That's not part of the 81. These are an additional 109 households, and they are agreeing to and making payments on $122,000 of back rent. So hopefully this layout is a little bit more clear, that these numbers aren't overlapping. One is not a subset of the other. These are 81 households that are behind $84,000. A separate 109 households that are behind 122,000. However, these two columns represent households that have entered into a repayment plan, so they are slowly getting caught up. All right. Any questions?
Yeah, I've got a question. How many evictions are we looking at? You said you've got legal process going on with a number of these 81 households.
Yeah, so through the process, so we do have eviction notices out to a number of households. And that process then plays out where we'll go to court. And depending on what all sides agree to, it could be some kind of stipulation where we say, if you make this payment, we'll let you stay. It could be a court order stipulation where the court says, you will agree to make this payment and then you can stay, or there'll actually be a judgment, an eviction judgment. So
how many are we talking about, Larry?
Well, certainly those 9 that I mentioned are in that process.
You say, no, I'm sorry, 9?
Those, yeah, the 9 households are at some point in that process. Yeah. Now, again, that doesn't mean that all nine will receive an eviction judgment. It could play out in many different scenarios, but they are in that process.
Okay, does anybody else have
any? Ask one more question. Once you started the legal process and notified the households, have you gotten anybody to pay up and try to avoid it?
Yeah, that is a major piece that we've seen historically well before COVID. When someone gets an eviction notice, often that is the piece that gets people to we get their attention with after multiple points of reaching out. So you'll see in previous reports the repayment agreement number has kind of gone up and gone down. But yes, that is something that we are realizing again, not realizing, but we are feeling so again.
Of the nine, do we have any paying up?
I would have to get back to you on that. I know because they're in that legal process, I don't know exactly what stage they're at.
I know we've been working towards this point, but it's a little bit uncomfortable to be there, I guess.
Yep. So I have confirmed, and I think I'm not sure the last update I had for the whole board. So I have confirmed with, and this doesn't mean it makes it any better for the households, but just maybe more for board members. In talking to HUD, in talking to the Wisconsin field office staff for HUD, they were blown away that we hadn't been doing this yet, that we hadn't been evicting people yet. Just based on their experience with other housing authorities around the state and what they've been seeing, and one-on-one conversations I've had with other housing authorities, they have been back to pre-COVID practices for some time now. So absolutely, it doesn't give any relief to any of the households that we're talking about. But we're not leading anything in terms of being the first or the only or one of a few going through this process. No, we're actually we've held out longer than most.
Okay, any other questions or comments from folks? Commissioner Gray.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kilmore, for this update too as well, and thanks for kind of reviewing the chart and making some changes as well. So I just want to reflect on some of the losses that's incurring with this, with the delinquent payments. Do you guys have a certain funding source that you are utilizing to kind of make up for the lost revenue? Can you talk a little bit about this aspect of it?
Good question. So certainly any repayment agreements that we enter, we would expect to get those funds back over time. If there's any stipulated repayment agreements that happen through the legal process, again, we would expect to get those dollars as HUD allows us to under the cap of 40% of a household's income. But then if someone leaves or if they get evicted, with a balance, then we really don't have recourse to recapture those funds. The one thing that we do monitor is that household wouldn't be able to re-enter our programs with an outstanding balance.
Okay. And I guess my follow-up question would be, so because if you guys lose those funds, do CDA then look at increasing rent the following year? I mean, how do you kind of make up for lost revenue if that's no longer an option to recap these funds? How do you guys make up for these losses?
Yeah, so there is really no, so to answer your first question, so we're not going to increase rent for other people to make up the difference. We're not able to. The rents are capped, and then what a household can be charged is capped. So really, I think we recognize that this can happen and that it does happen. In many cases, we just kind of take the loss, as part of our process. So that is the process for the public housing program. We have to write that debt off essentially. However, that is why our primary tool is repayment plans. Not only do we want to avoid evicting anybody, but we also want to realize that that income over time.
Thank you.
Anything else from anybody else? Okay, well, I think we are at the end of the meeting agenda. Does anybody have any questions or comments or want to make a motion to adjourn?
Make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Is there a second?
A second.
Okay, thanks, Madeline. So we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Have a great weekend. And I think we are reconvening again in early September.
Thank you, Commissioner Reeve.
Thanks, Greg.